almost 18 wonderful years, I retired as director of Christ Church in Greenville. It was a blessing every day. That's a true fact. It was wonderful. I still feel a little bit like I'm on vacation, only 5 months into retirement. And people really sort of constantly ask me, well, what do you do now? And I said, well, now I've kind of given up fishing for people. Now I just fish for fish. And when I think about fishing for fish, mostly that's trout on a fly rod. It's one of the reasons, just one of the reasons, I love coming to Linville. I told Cecil before the service started, this time of year, the trout are hungry, dumb, and plentiful. Makes me a great fisherman. But really, one day a year, I've got a friend who invites me on the third Wednesday of May to go fishing down on Lake Hartwell. And we fish for something called striped bass. I don't really know what a striped bass even is, but they're fun to catch, especially on the light tackle that we use. And they are, you know, they're good-sized fish sometimes. they're a lot of fun. And this last Wednesday, when we were down there, Wednesday before last, I guess, we were getting in the boat early, about 6:30 in the morning, and we went out to where the guide had scouted, and he believed that we would catch plenty of fish. And it's a pretty simple matter. You take a rod, the guide puts a little fish on a weighted hook, and you drop it over the side, it goes down to the bottom, and when the line stops going out, you just reel in three or four turns on the reel, and then you're fishing. And, you know, it could be some minutes, could be a little bit longer. You know, you'll feel the end of the rod kind of bounce around a little bit. Something is interested in your little fish down at the bottom. And you give it just a second, you set the hook, and then the fun really begins. And they are some kind of fun to reel in and get into the net. And at about 10 o'clock this last week and a half ago, I was minding my own business in the stern of the boat, and I felt that little nibble at the end of the line, and I set the hook. And I sort of knew immediately, I think this fish is a little different. It started taking out line and kept going and kept going, and I kind of looked at the guide, and he just sort of said, just be patient. And finally, it stopped, and I was able to start reeling in the line a little bit, and I got him closer to the boat, and then he took off again. And so I let him go out, and then when I could bring him back towards the boat, I did. And that second or third time I had him close to the boat, he was maybe a foot under the surface, and the guide was watching. And he looked at that fish, and his eyes got real big, and he said, something started with holy. I'm going to say the second word was fish. And he looked at everybody else, and he said, pull your lines in. He looked at me and he said, you've got a large mouth. I knew he wasn't talking about me. And so I started working with that fish. And eventually, we got him into the net. I was so excited. The guy took the hook out of his mouth and handed him to me so I could get a picture made with him. And I held him out so, you know, it would look even bigger in the picture than he was in real life. In the picture, he looks like he's about as big as my leg. He was a 9-pound largemouth bass. I hadn't shown the picture to too many people because I'm grinning so big in that picture, it looks like I just won the lottery. But it was an incredible experience. I can tell you that while I was fighting that fish and everybody else's lines were up, everybody was focused on that fish. I really pray a lot. I pray about most everything. But my first prayer that day, pretty fervently, was, Lord, let me land this fish. And we did. And while we were fighting, Everything else on the boat stopped. Nobody else was fishing. Everybody was just watching the water and that line kind of move around. And we were just focused. We were unified in our enthusiasm. You could feel the energy. I can promise you, in that moment, nobody was thinking about the doctor's appointment they had the next morning. Nobody was thinking about their son's impending graduation from Clemson the next day on that Thursday. Nobody was thinking about all the stuff that populates their calendar and what sort of tasks at work were gathering messages while we were out on the water. Everybody was just united in thought and in enthusiasm. We looked out from the boat and the sky was just blue and cloudless and the trees are green and the water is still. The company was good. We just sort of basked in the joy and the pleasure of being alive in the midst of God's creation. It was really glorious. And I imagine all of you could think of at least one or maybe a dozen experiences in your own life where you're so invested in the moment, you are so clear about the joy of being alive and with people you love and in the midst of God's creation, that everything else just seems to recede into the background. And I thought about that moment and how beautiful it was when I read this lesson from Acts about that first Pentecost. I thought, what must it have been like to be one of the apostles locked away in that upper room? Remember, it's just 50 days ago that they witnessed the crucifixion and then the resurrection. And they are afraid. They are lost. They're confused. They're worried about what comes next, about how life will unfold. They've had some encounters with Jesus since that day. The road to Emmaus, they had dinner with Jesus. They've seen sermons. They've seen more miracles. They were standing at the edge of that cliff, and they saw Jesus ascend and leave them behind. And despite all that they retreat to that upper room out of fear. They don't know what to do. And Acts tells us that into that room, the Holy Spirit rushed in like a thundering wind, and tongues as of fire descend on their heads. And they are transformed. In an instant, they receive the fullness of God's gift and God's presence, and they're changed in a moment. And they become courageous and fearless. Where there was no future before, now they have a real vision of what God might be calling them to do. Peter, who just 50 days ago denies three times that he even knows who Jesus is so overcome, so transformed, so emboldened by the Holy Spirit that he bursts out from that room, tumbles into the street below, and he begins to proclaim the good news and preach the gospel, and 3,000 people are baptized that day. It's a remarkable story, especially given how the disciples felt before that moment began. I'll make a confession. I've kind of stopped watching the news. It seems as though we live in a world that is increasingly divided there's no shortage of discord. And I find it difficult to watch the news. It's hard to hold on to hope. It's easy to lose heart when it seems that all the news is bad. And I wonder, what kind of future do we have? What's going to happen to our children, our grandchildren? What kind of world, what kind of society will they inherit? And then I think about the apostles on that first Pentecost. And I'm able to take heart. I'm able to regain a little hope. Because when the disciples felt that way, God entered into their womb with the gift of the Holy Spirit and transformed them. And I believe with all of my heart that that same Holy Spirit that entered into that upper room 2,000 years ago has entered into this room this morning. And so we need not worry about the future, because the gift of the Holy Spirit will transform us into the people that God has called and created us to be. God has promised us the Holy Spirit. God has promised us the future. God has promised to transform our lives in the same way that God transformed the lives of those people gathered together in that upper room. Now, you might be forgiven as you sit here this morning, and you may think, he's just telling us a fish tank. It's not a fish tank. It's the power of the gospel and the presence of the Holy Spirit in whom we live